now's our time. We're uncaged.
Welcome to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple, and you're locked on to the UK's hottest politics and music podcast. Each week, I bring you the rawest takes on the big stories making the news, always joined by a very special guest. Then, I pleasure your mind, body, and soul with the freshest, most banging international music going.
Uncaged.
Man blew the whistle more time than the licensed ref. Got me feeling like Howard Webb. Got Sams, Rams and 5-odd skengs. Got locked in jail, came out skinny, no need for a life of steads. Trigger fingers enough, caramels love cost in the way that a violent step. Baby girl want it's peak, but I'd rather get uck instead. My riders love.
Look, I may be the wrong side of 35, but as regular listeners to this podcast will know, I like to bring you some of the freshest and most groundbreaking independent and underground music going.
Is this a mountain dew? These whaps got me riding cute. Dot got a mouth for 2D money with a like a licensed tune. You can see me on your.
This week's a bit different. On this special episode, I go behind the scenes of some of this music to a record label and creative arts centre in South London.
Man's tea house living for riches, beefing cots, politicians, stitches, gallops.
The man I am meeting is responsible for some of the most pioneering grime, drill, rap and other genres going in the UK at the minute. But he is much, much more than that. Check this out. Yep, Topple Uncaged meets Corey Johnson of Defenders Entertainment.
So you'd started Defenders Entertainment quite a few years ago. What spurred you on? What was your vision to start a actual record label and record promotion organisation?
Defenders Entertainment started 15 years ago. I still had the same phone number, same email, and everything from then in 2003. Like literally then, yeah, was.
Well, you got the same email.
Yeah, got the same email, got the same phone number and everything, even to this day.
That's quite.
Yeah, so people could get at me. Got the same logo and everything. Okay. So in the small print, it says it what it was. It was Defenders of the Young Award Management. So the label was always started to kind of support young talent. There was like loads of artists and kids around my area that needed help and to get into the industry and like just like I did, but no one wasn't helping. So my whole thing was like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna then come into this industry and carve my own lane. So there wasn't like the independent movement, there wasn't like a structure towards even then taking on rap music. But the first project was this, was Best of British, where I then kind of made a list of everybody that was either on the radio or doing well on Channel U at the time, wasn't even there, but this was like whoever's name was on a flyer and doing out there on pirate radio, they were playing your music. I'm like, yeah, whoever you are, I'm going to get at you or get at someone who you know and get you to come down to the studio. So originally it started off just as a underground label that then knew one person who was LB, who was then credited as the creator of dubstep for him and his whole movement with Ghost Records and Groove Chronicles. And yeah, he was the only person I knew that had a studio. So me and Blade Brown, who was my first artist at the time, needed to get our mixtapes done. And then yeah, I just contacted like your Freddy Krueger's and like your Nasty Crews and like your 57 Dynasties and stuff, who was active, your Big P's and stuff, and said, okay, yeah, I need to get a day when you can come down. I've got the studio booked out for the month. Whatever day you can do, come down. Yeah, the hospitality's on me. Come and make something. So yeah, this was then made, and yeah, I went off to One Extra straight away, not knowing about licensing beats or anything that. Or anything. I was going to One Extra. I'm getting on the playlist now. And yeah, I actually got on the playlist with a Mobb Deep beat on BBC One Extra. So thank you, Laura Lucan. She actually bust the man there from early. Yeah, we actually was on the playlist. Me and Smalls, yeah, who Burrell and everything come, yeah, which is then great as well, is that yeah, literally as well, Ashley Burrell, he's massive, like he's in the film and acting industry, he's in loads of movies, and yeah, literally there's Smalls from SMS and myself, we had a song that yeah, it was there. Yeah, I was playlisted for about 4 weeks.
Until they realised?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think maybe just got rotation. And, no one ever knew the industry then. Yeah, we got away with it. We didn't get PRS because we didn't know about it then, but we still got the exposure. So yeah, that was enough. We were superstars. That was it. Yeah, we'd made it at the time as far as we'd thought. But that was just the early days of Defenders. Then it was then starting to work with a couple of different artists. So then I then started helping out with like DWE and Nasty Crew, started then taking on board like Lady Fury and a few other acts, and then Too Much then was the first act that got signed. So I actually signed Too Much in a 2-album deal with Mario Winans and Puffy.
Did you?
Yeah, the deal was actually done on Westwood Show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've still got the audio, so I'll play it to you in a second. The deal was done on the Westwood Show, where we were sitting next door, and the West was like, "What are you doing in town?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm here to sign some acts. Yeah, I'm signing Too Much." And we're like, "Well," looking at each other, like, "Well, we're getting signed." It's like jumping around like kids.
Well, you didn't know.
No, we didn't know it was going to be official. He said, "Yeah, I want us to work," and then literally announced it on video one that we're getting a deal. 2 weeks later, we're in New York. We're out there in New York. You've got Fight Club. So at the time, Too Much was battling in the UK. He was doing Jump Off, where then like him and Professor Green and all these other artists was going, him and like SAS and these other dudes was up against each other. And then next fixing, we're in New York, we're then battling against like Murder Mook and 40 Cal. We're Fight Club with like Sirius O and E and these guys, and yeah, they bloody.
And you found out on Westwood Show. That's
yeah,
mad.
Found out on Westwood that yeah, we're going to the
that's
next
such
level.
A good story.
So, yeah, came back to UK after a couple months. At the time, it was crazy because Too Much then, who was then supposed to be the biggest like act. Obviously, you've got this American deal. It's like baking the cake. You've got to have all the ingredients, and then it was crazy that I'd met up with Jenny Francis. A few months before and she started to then manage me and then show me more about the business, because Commander B at the time, who was then like massive influence for Grammy, introduced me to her one day in Choice FM, started speaking, saying yeah, I'm doing this music thing, and then she was like really into UK rap. Well, at the time there was like either you got like a little one spin if you was really close with like 279, but really it was like US rap and that was it. Commercial radio had no time.
It weren't anywhere, was
no
it?
Way it was not happening. So but I'm determined that we're making this UK rap, we're gonna have, this is the sound, this is what's happening. So she started then helping and guiding, making sure we're getting through. Started in getting us onto like radio, even when like people didn't want to have us on their show, she made sure she was pushing for like, yo, why? So she wasn't having the bar. So when I've come back, like me and Blade Brown started to blow up, like we're all over the radio, like I'm doing Lord of the Mics, I'm doing like Rolling with the Nines with my friends, making movies, like I'm collaborating with everyone. So like I'm there recording tracks with like Akon and Red Cafe and stuff, like you can see on the stage so I'm at this stage of like the industry where I'm actually doing international features, man. I'm performing at Glastonbury, Homelands Festival, coordinating stuff for like Love Music Hate Racism. So I'm starting to figure out all of the early Love Music Hate Racism like events and stuff, when you look on there, like me and Blade Brown and Fury and all of us were all on the lineup, Defenders logo same ways all over the artwork, same way it is today, even like 12, 13 years later we're still with them working with Love Music Hate Racism.
Excellent.
And doing stuff with them on an annual basis and stuff.
So sort of where you are now, I mean, it's you're quite a broad record label actually, because when I first found out about Defenders End, I sort of was like, okay, so it's drill and sort of more grime, but you're not just focused on drill and grime, are you?
It's always been good music, like for much as then, especially like now, where because of the studio, like my background, the artists that then have really kind of blown up the last few years, everyone associates us with a drill and grime label. But my biggest success has been pop and house music.
That's me. Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
So I'm actually more, if you wanted to put us on the map, you'd actually then work out that we're actually a pop and a house label. But we're actually the most underground rap label there is. But on paper, like, okay. Yeah. So, because for like 8 years, I was managing Flukes.
Oh, okay.
So all of that grime stuff that he created, that was all me then on the management side, the wifey rhythm, like Tiny's Hall Economics, like all of those like early kind of like Channel U kind of bangers, Rascals, Style OG, Sick Man, Ice Kid, all of that's all from in here and stuff, like that whole genre of
that's amazing
stuff. Then from there we started experimenting with this funky house sound. So then Crazy Cousins was then the next brand for me. So at the time it was like a year and a half that we was actually pushing that sound. But even if you look on like YouTube, you'll see like Do You Mind, Go, Funky Anthem, all of those videos and singles, they're all a year before KIG and Gracious K. Like the labels wasn't investing in Funky House then. It was only when they saw me making money, they're like, hold on a minute, why is this guy shooting on 35mm film, flying out his team to Ayanapa and shooting videos on the beach? He's shooting on red camera. It's like the latest camera come and shot Do You Mind on red camera. They're saying, hold on a minute, something's not. And then by the time I've hit Radio 1 playlist, that's it. Yeah, we need to get involved in that scene. So then, yeah, when you look at like the Egypts in the mornings, that's the following summer in 2009, when already the year before we'd already taken a chance and said, all right, let me fly out the team to Ayanapa, because the song was playing but no one didn't want to book us.
Yeah,
it was like, whoa, 10 of you. I said, yeah, well, I've got Kyla, I've got Pearl Face, I've got Craig Luke, I've got this one here, boom, this and that, mate, boy, it's a good idea. But
it's really it's really interesting, because you seem to have like had a instinct and a tendency to sort of pick up on what's going to blow up, as it were, before it actually happens. I mean, where's that come from? Is it, I mean, because you're a musician by trade, really, aren't you?
Yeah,
you were like 10 when you started.
I was signed to Dill, when really when I was 10 they done a whole project to kind of make young people aware of the ozone layer and the greenhouse effect. So really great idea, shit song, but yeah, yeah. And a music video, we was on Wackaday, Dance Energy, like we was sponsored by Pony and stuff like that. But yeah, so it was really then a good, but it wasn't then, like I think for me it was a good opening to music. But yeah, I think that for how I think I've maybe kind of stayed in touch with what's then coming next is that I'm then in the trenches, I'm then in that underground part of the music. So I kind of then, and plus as well, I put in and develop sounds.
Yeah,
so a lot of the time it's like, yeah, it's not just knowing the new trend, but it's actually just backing and believing it when it's not even a thing.
Yeah,
so that's what then, whether it's in like a platform and stuff, like, or whether it's like a grind daily, or like when Posty was here starting, I was like, yeah, bro, you need a media pack. You need a rate card. You say, what, rate card? I'm like, bro, you need a rate card. And then next thing we know, we're getting money off of Dr. J's and Adidas. And then now look, now they're like gatekeepers in the game. You know what I mean? Same way it would be an Eskimo dancer. Yeah, we're going to do a comeback. I'm sitting with Cheeky. I'm like, bro, this is massive. Like, well, you should do A, B, and C. Now it's the official branding.
Yeah.
So yeah, sometimes it's just supporting what's then coming through and then giving it a bit of a push as well. And I think that's what's creating these things, because the game's good at the moment, the industry's even more than so. It's people sitting down and watching for numbers and views. So then it's creating those wagons that people can jump on now. But someone's got to put the wheels on it.
Yeah.
Or else it's not a wagon.
And this is the thing, and this is it's like my main issue with drill, is that it's so stigmatized, and there's so much fucking propaganda in the press about it and coming out of the government and blah blah, drills inciting this, drills inciting that. I mean, but you're extremely positive about the music, and you're positive about encouraging the youngest to get involved with it. I mean, what did you, when drill first sort of started breaking through, because it kind of came off the back of trap, really, didn't it?
I've seen the transition. It's really, for me, because we put out like the Heady One mixtape, then which he was lucky to get picked up and signed to Relentless, like your Zone 2's, Harlem's, all of them come in and record. So I've seen the last 3 years, like 4 years of that transition. Same way I've been putting on events here bi-monthly with Khan's Hill, we do the producer link up here. So I've seen even the producers' sounds kind of change over that time. And really it's come from what's then like a sound, and has come from where people are then speaking about what's happening within their lives and their communities, to some people then getting involved just for the bravado.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is then poetic. So it's kind of then grabbing between the what is then really then factual and what's poetry. And I think that then now that's when it's then got the exposure in the media, what's happening within the community. Because even without the music, there'll still be these stabbings, because it's a social and economic problem. It's not about the music, it's about the circumstances that they're in. It's the lack of resources, youth centres, it's the lack of support for their parents, so the parents are not even able to discipline them anymore. It's the lack of access this even to support from mental health to social, because it's not just about throwing money at them either, it's just a support network some of them need.
Yeah.
And some of that support's just simply at home. It's the easiest things, is just a roof over their head and a hot meal.
Yeah.
That some of those basics is then what triggers these social economic problems. So when it's then easy to blame the music, we're now looking at something that for me is economically having, from what I call like this Stormzy era, is then got young people like Stormzy that then have got their managers who are their mates, who have got their friends that are part of their actual business and legitimately making money and wages now where they can even afford to be homeowners.
Yeah,
this is now economically a problem, because we've got then re-gentrification. You've then got now young people independently making legitimate money. So then there's always going to be a fight towards, okay, then how is this money being made? You're then going to have in anything one or two bad apples.
Yeah.
Just no matter which way, any genre you go into, any business you go into, it's like saying football doesn't have people that do match fixing.
Yeah.
Or football doesn't have the hooligans, but not every football fan who supports Millwall is a football hooligan, or whichever, or you know what I mean, West Ham, they're not every person who supports West Ham, of course they've, a few of them, but it's not everybody. Some people genuinely support the team.
Yeah.
So, same with music, it's not every young person that's in a gang, because most of them aren't.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them really just scared of safety in numbers. And given the opportunity or given the support, most of them wouldn't do what they do. But because there isn't that support, because there isn't it being laid out as simple as, oh yeah, and it's not just that everyone's going to be famous, because they're not. There's a load of different businesses and skill sets in and around each industry that sometimes young people ain't shown. So you're not shown that, yeah, you're maybe not going to be the striker, but you could be the kit man who's still living a 5-star lifestyle.
Yeah.
He's still living, flying around the world with the team and what could a car he drives. You're not seeing Frank looking around, or woman who works as a physiotherapist. You're not seeing the director, or the other people in the business, the journalists, the PR, and the other people that are right in the industry, that are backstage VIP, living all the life you want to live. But you're not seeing that as an option, because those routes are not being highlighted enough. So I think
more. And that's the problem for me. I mean, for me, it's the problem with sort of our sort of mainstream media and the corporations in this country, that you get an image that to sort of be the top of your game, you have to be at the front of the sort of front of the image of it all. It's promoted by sort of fucking talent shows. It's promoted by the more corporate music industry. Mm-hmm. Whereas in reality, there's numerous careers that can come off of this. We're sitting in your complex now, and there's your complex shows. I mean, you've got a guy who's went outside as a sounds engineer, you've got other people who are doing PR,
management, it's just different works, but they don't understand that until you see. So I think there needs to be a little bit more of a, not just in music, but just in general, but where music and entertainment's our biggest export in the UK, we don't manufacture anything, we don't build anything. This is what we've got. We need to harness that for me, and I think that's what's then massively missing. I think that then, for what then is like a sound that's demonised, it's big business. So it's easy then, like most things, the big bit, as soon as then something's making money that they can't control, then it has to be something negative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the big thing. We won't go on to cannabis in terms of that. Have you seen Grass is Greener on Netflix?
No, I will.
Very interesting. That's for another show.
Definitely see that side for these to watch. Okay,
but you're spot on. Yeah, as soon as they can package it up and market it, then it's all good. And if they can't, then like you say, it's negative. Because I was speaking to Drill Minister, who's one of your artists, about this same thing. And as I said to you off air, my dad's a jazz musician by trade, and he was sort of always vocal about the political sort of side of jazz. And we've seen this throughout history, where you go back to 20s and 30s, and jazz was demonised by the sort of Christian evangelical church in the US as being satanic and blah, blah, blah. Then you sort of move to when rock and roll first started, not your white Elvis Presley rock and roll, but proper rock and roll. Frank Sinatra, for example, came out and slagged black musicians doing rock and roll off. You had the same with hip-hop, you had the same with garage, you had the same with grime. I mean, essentially for me, it's whenever people of colour do music, it's essentially always turned as a weapon against them to it's institutionalised racism, and it's used as a cover for other shit that's going on in society, which is actually to blame. I mean,
But I think
that's my take. What's your
I think that there's two parts of it. Mm. It's one that, even back to the last point, is that that definitely is a whole pattern that's there and consistently, and I think it goes to then not being able to control it. But then where it's easy, and this is why we need the culture of them not supporting their creatives to stop, is that you can't go to the bank loan. Like even when Frank Sinatra was first starting, when he wanted to get his music career going, he had to go to the mob to get studio time, to get then the ability to record or whatever, and all. Like he had to then go to the mob to be able to get bookings, because they was the ones who then had disposable money that could then invest in something that he creatively could do. From what we're seeing now, from Mercury Prize winners to Forbes list, there's now enough justification so that then young people who were needing to then, and are talented and doing music or creativity, shouldn't need to then look to the road for them to then invest in their music.
Yeah.
That's where then, from when it's being taxed, it's then being streamed, it's their income that's being regulated, and the country's biggest export, 9.6 billion last year. I think there's time to invest in,
in that next
of it, because ultimately it's going to then, because otherwise you're going to have anything that then has the potential to make money is going to have then other people that have a disposable income, the first ones who are prone to invest. If there was support, they wouldn't then invest. They would have the structure and have the support. But without that investment into creativity, without being music's being seen as a proper business, Or then when does the support come in, or the bank loan come in, or when does the levels come in, just to be able to even say, okay, I'm going to do this event. So at some stage then there comes where then they're taking help maybe from the wrong hands. It doesn't necessarily make them the bad person, it's just the circumstances out there. It's not justifying anything that they've got into, but a lot of people are victims of circumstances.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that reflects a lot in drill. I mean, as you were saying earlier on, there's this whole sort of propaganda campaign about how it's inciting violence, etc. It's not, it's a reflection of people's lives and what
the violence is there.
Is there anyway?
Anyway, there's taunts, there's people who can then egg on. I'm sure that there's a thing that goes with it, but even before the internet, there was this gang violence. So you can't then blame it just on music videos. When I was younger, I had my kneecap chopped off, my shoulder chopped off. There wasn't YouTube, there was these problems in the community. A lot of it's in the poorer communities where we don't have those supports, or we're prone to the other social issues. But it's not the problem, you can't blame music, it's the economics.
It really winds me up, because especially last year, it was mad in the press, wasn't it, about knife crime epidemic in London, black kids killing black kids, blah 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 blah. And being a journalist, I was like, no, this ain't right, and I sort of delved into the figures. The murder rate and knife crime rate was highest under Tony Blair in 2003 in modern history, and that was the highest. It was like something like 203 murders, and there was over 5,000 hospitalizations in London alone.
And for me, that's in what my take on it is, because in those days there was a lot more guns and a lot more stabbings and violence and everything, so I could imagine that the statistics would be higher because that's literally how I had viewed it. But now you've got then more young people who were then living up to the bravado, but then the statistics then isn't really there, because these aren't bad kids. These are really just, a lot of them are scared. It's safety that they want, because they want to act like they can't be trouble. But most of them is like, I would just hope it doesn't happen to me.
That's their mentality,
a lot of it behind. Of course you've got a few naughty ones, there's always a mixture of all, but I think that the majority of them aren't as they crack out to be, and not just in music, I just think in the estates, in the communities, they're not as bad.
They ain't. I mean, if it's like where me and my girlfriend live, we know a lot of the youngers, and they're all good kids. Yeah. Like, so there's nothing wrong with any of them at all.
Of course. They'll be polite. We've got manners.
They're nice. The other day, they were helping me like lift something around to a neighbour's house because it was delivered to ours. Yeah, and they're like, we'll give you a hand.
Just naturally, there was this thing. But the people that then demonise them, those are the ones they kind of play up to.
Yeah, exactly. But what happened to these same kids a couple of weeks before was there was about 20 of them in our local park. Police came round, blocked off every entrance to the park, and stop and searched a whole lot of them for no reason. And none of them had anything on them.
Nothing.
And then people wonder why that some kids go off the rails and have issues with the police. The same thing happened a couple of days ago. One of them stopped and searched, and they had a small amount of Class A and a small amount of Class B on them. 24 hours in the police cell, no access to his solicitor, bust his hand while he was there, and let him out on bail. And then wonder why people don't trust the police.
Yeah, and they come out and be angry when that community involvement, they're not even involved in when in primary schools we used to have them come to like little school discos.
Yeah,
they used to get involved with more the young people, but it's not there. But now it's just literally for harassment and then to come and bully.
Yeah.
So straight away, yeah, when they're only called to bully or to harass, then it's automatically that set the whole defence is where, yeah, the only time you see the police, that's the only vision you've got of them.
Yeah, and that is all you see, especially in our, I mean, you're like, to be honest, we're lucky if the police come to our postcode after the time, they won't come if there's something up.
I know, if you report something, they'll come a couple of days later.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know this.
Yeah, we'll come on Thursday.
They ain't there quickly. Or they'll stay in their fucking helicopter because they don't come down onto the actual on road.
Yeah, those things are long ones.
Go on, take a break. Go and grab yourself some refreshment because me and Corey will be back in a few seconds.
I mean, like you're quite right that most of these kids aren't bad at all, and it's just a major press and government campaign to sort of smear drill music. I mean, there's a lot of positive stuff in it, though, and there's a lot of positive for me. There's a lot of positive music out there generally at the minute. I do, as we're saying off air, a lot of stuff I do is reggae. It's sort of the revival movement, it's roots. I've done stuff with big name acts like Prodigy and Kabaka Pyramid, but I work with a lot of more underground artists, so I ain't getting attention, and some brilliant people involved in sort of what's coming out of Jamaica. And it was really exciting. A lot of fucking well good women as well.
Really good
female artists all coming out.
Yeah, you know, there's a whole wave of them right now.
Zaya Benjamin,
Davi, there's Devana, there's like, literally Shauna Chin.
Yeah, there's another one, Ray Nichols, another one who's coming up.
Coffee, there's like, obviously, there's so many in that genre right now. The girls actually doing.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
And the new school kids that are coming through, man. I think there's a new wave of artists, but right now there's never been. And even in that UK, you've got like your Lisa Mercedes and other artists that they're bringing, starting to wave the dancehall flag and actually being noticed, fit by like your Nicki Minaj's and everything as well. So I think, for female dancehall, it's never been a more buzzing time, because we always have one or two at the most.
But
I think since like this new era with like Spice and everything, she just opened up the doors.
There's a whole movement coming through.
It's powerful,
It's always a really positive like movement. Whenever I speak to artists involved in it, it's full of positivity. It talks about negative stuff in the music, it talks about the state of the world, and talks about the system and blah blah blah, blah. But it's all very positive, and people kind of know it for that. I mean, how do you think that we can get drill to shake off this bad reputation it's got and move past that, and so people can actually start seeing it for the shit art music and the skills of the artists and the people involved, can see past all that and see the actual quality of the music? How do you think we're going to do that?
Three things. I don't have all the solutions, but I have three suggestions. Three practical things that I'm doing. Three practical things that the majors and the corporations can do. First thing is that I've just launched a platform which is managed and run by young people called OTTV. Just for young people, where they're talented. There's a lot of them that sing, they dance, they rap, but they're only living up to this sound because they want to kind of fit into where they feel that that's where they can get a certain amount of exposure, or that's where they can get a certain amount of credibility. With the right support, next week I'm there speaking to like YouTube, to One Extra, to Google, because even with YouTube, I said, well, we've got egg and a chicken, but I want chicken. They said, what do you mean? I said, I want chicken. I said, let me tell you the egg and the chicken, what we've got here. Now I want you to figure this out. In order for me to get your support and access to your resources, you want me to then build up my platform until I get 10,000 subscribers, which is fine, it's part of the process and all the rest of it. If you supported my platform, I'd get the 10,000 subscribers in a day. Egg and the chicken.
Yeah, no,
so if you want a positive solution, get behind it. Which is then a big part of it, I think, for one. Musically, now, and then given where YouTube labels and people actually then start signing more acts that then are not just road, so they give a fair kind of balance. Then it gives an example that, oh yeah, well, I don't have to just make this sound, I can be like this and then get it. But it's a numbers game. But with a numbers game, it comes with marketing and opportunities and stuff. So there's ways to make it work if you want there to be a influx of this new sound, because I think music's evolving, so it's getting more into good music.
Yeah.
Which then comes with number three, good music. I think then is supporting that good music a bit more, so that the songs and stuff that are coming through now, especially like these artists are already evolving. The music's evolving.
Yeah.
The dances are coming into it. It's getting brighter. We're at like where we was at with like, yeah, last year I would say we was at the height of like Public Enemy and NWA days.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, well,
yeah, for the last couple of years it was really raw, it was really underground. Yeah. It's like now people are starting to be a bit more fashionable, people are more colourful, they're a bit more expressive with their art. So I think that that's what we're then now getting now, is that it's getting more artistic, it's getting more of a budget. So I think the music and the sound's evolving, because now people want to get playlisted now, they want to get paid, they want, so what's coming from then? And plus they're living through different things, so now they're experiencing things, but they've got better things to speak about, because one or two of them are seeing a better life.
Yeah, they're naturally grabbing you.
They're naturally growing into it, so they are considering, okay, I've made this song for the girls. But before it's like, I just want to make this song to express how I feel, I want to make this song to tell them this, but now it's like, okay, I want to make this song to then get heard, I want to make this song to get on the Spotify playlist. There's now a different motive, but as it comes from anything, from seeing is believing.
So now
they've seen those examples, I feel like that's what's given that kind of inroad. So I think good music, and the music's evolving, support it. And that's the main thing.
Definitely.
Because otherwise, if you're not going to support those songs, then it's like back to the drawing board then, because if you're only going to support me when I'm doing this, then maybe I need to get back to doing this.
I mean, also I'm interested that you were sort of in the garage scene when it was at its heyday. I can't claim credit for this question. My girlfriend wanted me to ask you this, because she's interested, because she was well into the garage scene when she was younger. Back in those days, you had kind of more pirate radio. You had an actual scene in terms of clubs and raves and places to go. So there was different inroads for people to actually get into the music. Now, with everything in the age of kind of algorithms and the age of the internet, how different is it now to try and sort of break through as an independent artist into the music industry to how it was, say, for 15 years ago? Is it harder, or is it just kind of different now, do you think?
I think it's different now.
Mm.
And in some ways easier.
Okay.
But once you've figured out some bits as an independent, if you're then not in then the little boys clubs and so forth, then what people do is try right now, even though it's easier, a lot of people hold back the knowledge.
Mm.
Where then before it was harder, but because then it was a little more realer, then a lot of people was then giving the knowledge.
Yeah.
So even though then it was there was more processes, you need to spend more money, there was more things to be done, like then music was more gangster in the garage days than it is now.
Exactly.
Way more. There was, you like, you couldn't go raving unless you had like a 3-4 grand outfit.
Yeah.
Now they want a 3 grand outfit just for the video.
Yeah.
No, you needed that just to go out.
Yeah.
Like
I'm seeing the machino hanging out.
Yeah, that's them days. That's exactly that. You could have gone probably over Selfridges then, there was no reason for you to be in the club.
Yeah.
Yeah, like most of the rave scene, and that's just rugged by drugs, money.
Mm.
Like a lot of the big boys behind it, some proper serious gangsters, that then they had the pirate stations, they had the things. So then music was then fully run by road. So for what they're then demonized now.
But
because it was then harder in a sense that if you didn't have access or the money to then pay studio, you needed thousands of pounds to then make a song. You needed thousands of pounds for a video. Now you can then shoot a video for a couple hundred quid. You can then get your mate to record you at home.
Yeah.
So the processes are then easier, but the knowledge, people ain't then giving it out as freely.
Yeah.
Where before, the processes were harder, but you could then be in it. Maybe if a man was off his face and buzzing in a rave, he's still talking, hello, man, in Kalina Mastery. You think, Mastery, what's that? okay, well, okay. They weren't like you could go and Google it, but you could ask an Iron Man. He was happy to tell you, just the fact you wanted to know. So you kind of one post led to another post, and before you knew it, you kind of bottled your way through it. But now, even though there's this wide world web of information, unless you know where to look or people point you in the right direction, a lot of the times, you can just more or less fish around and not get to see.
That's really interesting. I'm fascinated by that. Because you'd think that it would be more difficult, but everything you say is, it's fascinating, really, really interesting. Yeah. You do a lot of community work as well. That's because I'm looking around your office and you sort of got the Defenders Entertainment poster, but then you've also got a Community Youth London poster. I mean, and it's been a big part of what you've done throughout your sort of career and throughout your time as an entrepreneur, I suppose you are, really. Why is sort of youth and community work so important to you? What motivates you with that?
It's so mad that for something that then I'm so passionate about, it's my baby, like community youth is. It's what then I'm maybe most passionate about of all the things I do. It's just something where I just wanted to give young creatives the opportunity. And then as more and more young creatives came, the team around me, we then felt like it was need for them to then get something more out of what we was doing. It wasn't just about them just coming and hanging out. It was not a community center, it's a business. So they need to understand why it's a business. I think that's the first thing. It was like the team said, we've got all these young people, they want to be here, and they just gravitate towards the place. So it needed structure. So people then said, we can get you funding, and we can. And at the beginning, we didn't understand the voluntary sector, so I didn't want to take the funding and mess it up. So, okay. we just became service provider. And then 12 years now as a media charity, we're now at the stage where we are then boom, working and having conversations about then having the provision funded and then going to franchise these studios in different parts of the city, in different cities, just be the McDonald's of the music business. So and then it's a formula that's worked, it's tried, it's tested, man. Big Mac's a Big Mac, cheeseburger's a cheeseburger. So
Corey Johnson's,
so I've got the formula. I'm like, let me roll this out and get behind it. But it's taking my own time, taking my own money, and other creatives around me that I've been fortunate that there are some real creatives that care about young people too. So it's not been me by myself, it's been that I'm a team of people and different people that have been blessed to have come on board, and those people have been the ones that even sometimes they bring a skill set, they bring some links, resources, even if they don't have the money, they've still then got the other bits where they're looking for money themselves, they just want to help. And I think that's what's been a massive thing over the years, but now we've got some programs and a few campaigns we're ready to roll out.
Excellent.
So and some conversation I'm having where I'm offering the police like stop and search training, like I did 5 years ago in Lewisham. I already ran a pilot, so we could have already been training them how to deal with young people, but sometimes you've got to have the problem reach its height before someone deals with it. There's workshops and teaching young people around their stop and search rights, the knife crime campaigns, and these are all things that I've funded and developed myself, because I didn't want to go with a cap in hand idea and then hear any red tape. I'm just like, this is what's happening, are you involved or not, this is what's going down, are you down, okay, you're not down, okay, boom, next time it's going to cost you.
I love your attitude.
That's my attitude to it, because this is what's happening, well, just get down or lay down.
This is it, exactly. It frustrates me. I spend so much time outside of music dealing with like charities wanting me to do stuff for them, or can you come and write about this for me? I'm like, yeah, sure, this is how I want to do it. We have to do this, and I'm like, why can't people just get shit done?
This one, like, no,
just do
let's
it.
Get done, let's just do it, let's actually make it happen. So now, and even if we do it at this scale, by the time we've done it, we'll build on that, and we'll build. And that's been my attitude. So OTTV ready to go. I'm creating some content and some campaigns to kick it off myself, whilst I'm still having the conversations with the powers that be and saying, get behind it, because this is what I'm doing independently. I can show the statistics of how many young people have now taken music as a full-time career, how many young people have then left the actual criminal system full-time and are now have entertainment as a full-time career, how many young people that then are involved with others' careers that then now have given them a pathway and an outlet towards then a full-time career. So, and these are careers and transferable skills that can be taken anywhere in the world. So it's not just about every young person is going to be a rapper or a driller. It's about support for creative industries, and there's other great services like myself that are out there that they're still under supported and under the radar. So I'm not out to just profile what I do. Part of OTTV's work is actually profiling the other amazing organisations that are out there that are underfunded, under-supported and underappreciated.
Excellent. And so, to wrap up, I mean, what for the rest of the year, what are you up to? What's Defenders Entertainment got in store? Because you've got a great track out from Anon at the minute with the Growing Violinist. That's fire. That's brilliant.
Yeah, no, really, that's a blessing. We've got all of the This Is compilations are set this year. Mm-hmm. So This Is UK Rap just dropped. We've got the Rap Awards going with that in 2 months' time. So that's exciting.
Excellent, yeah.
It's the first time a live stream awards is happening.
I'm looking forward to that. I knew about that last year.
Yeah, so we've been putting a lot of groundwork for that because something I thought, well, yeah, we'd do it in a week's time, and it took like a year and a half planning.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes, because basically what this is, isn't it, is where people have been nominating for loads of categories. It's like Rap Awards, but what you're going to do, you're going to go and present the awards live, hopefully in people's communities, isn't it?
Go to their studios, to where they've grown up, or wherever they want us to pre-arrange to come and see them.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and
it's
really kind of good. Take it kind of more to like, yeah, this is where you started your music. Like, come around to Nan's house and have a cup
that's
of tea.
That's so good.
Yeah, and actually, present the award. Like, yeah, even just for your whole estate to see that, wow, this is really the local hero.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of that even is. The same examples I'm saying that, yeah, those are the opportunities and stuff that, yeah, that need to be supported, the labels, the managers, people need to get behind it. And yes, do things for that next generation, because we're not all just out to just save the world. There's also a good business behind helping the next generation.
Of course.
There's good economics behind doing it, and plus a real good feeling.
Exactly.
And I think that's what then the missing bit of it is.
I can see it in your eyes and your face. Your face lights up when you're talking about this stuff, and that's my
passion. It's what, so I'm about to. So for us this year, I'm building them, come to position Defenders and OTTV and CYL within mainstream media, education and music, come to take a piece of the pie I've been plotting for a couple of years. And I've not come to get along, I've just come to take my rightful share and to do and direct as I see should be done on the land. So it's Corey Johnson, Defenders Entertainment. It's Darth Maul for those who know the Underground Jedi. There's no stopping. So you can be anything you want to be. Remember, that's the motto, Defenders Entertainment. You know what this is, right?
You're a star, Corey Johnson. Thank you so much.
How good is he? I have to say, I had the best time going to the Defenders Entertainment studio. It was a real privilege and honour to go and see what goes on behind the scenes, like I said in the introduction, of some of the hottest drill and grime music in the UK. So big love to Corey. It was great to meet him. And here is some of the hottest grime in the UK. It's an amazing track by one of their artists, Anon, featuring the fantastic Grime Violinist. This is Medicated, truly awesome grime. This is Medicated by Anon, featuring the Grime Violinist.
Since day one, they said I was crazy twisted. Couldn't be a sicker guy, constantly judging my brethren's drifted. Self-destructive, so reluctant to accept I was mentally shifted. They say that I'm borderline, bro. Apparently they put a label on this shit. Psychopath, sociopath, suicidal, yeah, that's what they say. Call me weak, you ain't even last an hour, don't let alone a day. Look, I'm a fighter though, but that's what I want you to know. The other personal shit that I wrote in my suicide note, it just ain't for show. Look, where do I start? How do you wanna see into the heart? How do you wanna see into the soul with no light feared, constantly dark? My story ain't like yours, bruv. My story ain't got three parts. I've got that middle and ending sorted. Childhood's destiny, I had no start. Mentally blocked, mentally scarred, mentally fucked up. So many mental mentalities that the fatalities to get plugged up. I get passed round therapists, one to the next, on to the next. Next time that it's on to the next, let's cut to our meds and it's on to the death bed. Is it serious now? Burrow on my neck, yeah, it's serious now. Plans to die, a regular occurrence, nightly bro, so it's serious now. Don't look so surprised, I know you can see in the eyes. I was always the one with the banner, now it's just hatred and therapy ties. Yeah. Look. I had to get this out.
And that's it. This very special episode of Topple Uncaged is done. I'd like to thank the incredible Corey Johnson for coming on. You can follow him on Twitter. It's at Corey Johnson UK. Also follow Defenders Entertainment on Twitter. It's at Defenders End. As always, behind the scenes, thank you to the love of my life, the gorgeous Nicola Jeffrey. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Nicola C. Jeffrey. My man in the booth, sounds engineer Gav Paws. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Paws with the Z Radio. And my in-house singer, it's Ray Star Music. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Ray underscore Star 113. Until next time, take care of yourselves. I'll see you very soon.
Uncaged.